Hello and welcome to OU's Nach Yomi. You can find this year posted at ouradio.org/nach or on my website, ericlevy.com, under the recording section. Hi, it's currently Motzei Pesach. It's after the Passover holiday, Tavshin Samach Chet. This is Rabbi Eric Levy, pleased to bring to you Chapter 33, Lamed Gimel of Sefer Yeshayahu. I'd like to point out something in the last lesson, that is on the last chapter. The final verses in that chapter start starting from the turnaround in Ad Ye'ara Aleinu Ruach Mimarom, talk very positively about the future kingdom of Judah and Israel. It's a rebirth of its cities, its social mechanisms, and its economy, all very positive. Everything's positive, except for the very poetic but very difficult verse 19. Uvarad beredet ha'ya'ar uvashifla tishbal ha'ir. As I explained, this as sort of one more shot against the oppressing enemy, which is probably Ashur, and represented by the destruction of their city, Tishbal Ha'ir, their city will be lowered. But not only is it an unusual turnaround from all the other psukim surrounding it, which are very positive, the word Ya'ar in the pasuk is used, you have to say it's used negatively there, but it's used in verse 15 in a very positive sense. So perhaps the Ibn Ezra is in the right when he explains that really it's a continuation of the positive verse. Then what does he do with the seemingly negative language? So he says like this, V'ta'a v'hatam ki'im yered barad el hayar yered velo el mikom hazera. V'tam tashpil ha'ir sheteshev prazot babika. And the meaning, when the hail hails down, it will fall only to the forest level, that is, it will be protected by the trees, but not get down all the way to the seeded fields, which will be safe. And the meaning of you will lower the city is that you will dwell in unwalled cities in the valley, that is to say that there will be no fear of war, and people will feel comfortable coming out from behind the walled cities. But be it as it may, there's no doubt in this chapter, 33, Lamed Gimel, we definitely begin negatively and direct our wrath at the enemy, which is Ashur. So let us begin. Hoi shodeid v'atalo shadud. Uvogeid velovag duvo. Kehat imcha shodeid tushad. Kan lotecha livgod yivgidu bach. Oh, you plunderer, yet you were not plundered. You traitor, and they didn't deal treacherously with you. When you're finished with your plundering, you will be plundered. And when you complete your treachery, they will deal treacherously with you. I'm tempted to follow Rashi's lead here, who translates bogeid, treachery, not as just rebelling, but specifically looting the enemy. First of all, it's a better parallel to shodeid. Shodeid is a physical attack, so if bogeid is not to be treacherous, but to plunder, then a financial attack follows well. First a physical attack, then a financial attack. Additionally, historically, we have a little bit of a problem, because there's no doubt, it says, if bogeid v'lo vagduvo, you were treacherous, Ashur, and yet nobody was treacherous against you, it's a little difficult to say that, because Chizkiyahu did in fact rebel treacherously against Ashur. It says so specifically in Sefer Melachim, the Book of Kings, and in Sanhedrin's own writings, he describes exactly what the plot was. You don't have to agree with Ashur's policy. You could agree that Chizkiyahu was in the right to rebel against his oppressors, Sanherib and Ashur, but there's no doubt that Chizkiyahu did in fact rebel against them. So perhaps Bagduvo, Velo Bagduvo, should simply be nobody took you to the cleaners, nobody looted you. Anyway, continuing on to the next pasuk. Adonai choneinu lecha kivinu heye zeroam ala bekarim af yishuatenu beitzara. So times are trouble, but we pray, O Lord, have mercy on us. We put our hope in you. Kivinu lecha kivinu. Be strong against them every day. Zeroam heye zeroam ala bekarim. Even our salvation, or be our salvation, troubled times. Mikol hamon nadidu amima. Merom mutecha naftzu goyim. From the noise of the clamor, that is the sound of your coming, the coming of God, nations have fled from your majesty, or from your massive heights, rom mutecha, the nations scattered. And as I mentioned before, it's past tense, but in a prayer, a lament in times of trouble, past tense is used as what's called the confidence tense. Confidence, the prophet is saying that these things will surely come to be. V'usaf shalachem osef hechasil kimashak gevim shokek bo. You have a lot of this stuff in Sefer Yishayahu. He's very playful with his words. Kemashak gevim shokek bo. A lot of alliteration and fancy footwork on the poetry. And still, imagining God as the coming host of war, the verse says, the spoils of your booty are like the spoils of the locusts, amassed like the masses of the grasshoppers. So it's not entirely clear. It could be that the image is that God will scoop up the enemy, Ashur, as if they were masses of locusts. It's easy picking. It could be that the sense is that God will be like the locusts or grasshoppers that will despoil the land, because that's the way they behave, by eating up every good thing. But the sense is the same, that God will come in his glory and he will essentially take Ashur to the cleaners physically and financially. Nisgav Adonai kishochem arom milei tzion mishpat utzdaka. And as a result of God's coming and his decimation of the enemy, it says, the Lord is exalted, Nisgav, and he dwells on high. He fills Zion, i.e. Yushlayim, and perhaps the whole of Zion, that is the whole of Israel, with justice and righteousness. I think the sense here is that God does the right thing by saving the Jewish people, that he fills it up with his righteousness, and therefore expects us to do the right thing by being just in our social and judicial dealings, that we should also fill the city up with mishpat and staka. V'haya emunat itecha chosen yeshuot chachmat vadat yirat Adonai hi otsaro. A slightly challenging verse, but it's really ending the section of God's salvation. It describes it this way. Here is why the future is reliable. I think I'm translating itecha as your future and emunah as reliable or rock solid. Chos and Yeshuot, Chochmat Adat, the cash or the store or the treasury of salvation is knowledge and wisdom, that is following God's law. And fear of God, Yirat Adonai, he otsaro, he is the treasure. And this means that if you make these attributes the one that you hoard, the ones that you gather and prize, then he will guarantee your future, the salvation. And because this prayer is a prayer for the future, expectation and confidence of a salvation which will surely be coming. So, of course, we have to describe the troubles. As I mentioned in previous lessons, essentially these are laments. They're living in great times of trouble. So you start off with saying, oh, I know God's going to save me, and God is going to do wonders for me, but then you have to get down to earth and say, and this is what the current situation is, which is exactly we're 1 year away from the full invasion, as we described in the previous chapter, Yamim Lishana. And the land, and we're describing the treachery and the destruction, which is really quite already on the move. Hein er elam sa'aku chutza malachei shalom mar yivkayun nashamu misilot shavat over orach hefer berit ma'asarim lo chashav enosh. Behold, the er elam, I'll translate that or try to translate that in a little bit. The er elam are crying out, sa'ku chutza, and messengers are crying a bitter cry. The roads are deserted, travelers have stopped, covenants are broken, cities are despised or abandoned. Man cannot be counted. The word er elam is a challenge, but it's parallel to malachim in the next part of the stanza. So perhaps these are the scouts of Ariel, Er Elam Ariel. And Ariel is, if you remember, a synonym for Jerusalem, Lion of God, or the Mountain of God, Har El. And their job was, perhaps these mighty messengers were like scouts. Their job was to see what was happening all over the land and in neighboring lands, what with the coming of the Assyrian forces. And that's, I think, why the word is used, chutzah, which means not only in Israel, but they were there as messengers to go to outside countries and see what the current status was given the oncoming storm of war. The words tsa'aku, by the way, the Er Elam, they're tsa'aku chutzah. And tsa'aku not only means cry, but it's used in Tanakh to indicate a call to gather forces. Both tsa'aku and za'aku, you'll see, means to gather forces, a cry for essentially a draft that soldiers could come to help them fight. But what they find is that the treaties with the neighboring states are abandoned. That's a fair breach, which means there are no deals anywhere to be had. Every country is for itself,
people are abandoning the very cities that they were hoping to use as lines of defense. And then it says, lo chashav enosh. I don't think chashav means are considered or important, but chashav from the word cheshbon, there's nobody to count, so there's no army to gather, which is why it's no wonder that the messengers are wailing quite bitterly, mar yivkayun. Aval umlala aretz hechpir levanon kamal hayah sharon karavav v'no'er bashan v'charmel. The land is wholly withered, abandoned. The Lebanon is in shame and dried up. The Sharon, this is the usually fruitful coastal area between Haifa and Tel Aviv, is like the Arava, which is the desert land surrounding the Jordan River, the Bashan, which is the Golan Heights, and the Carmel, which is probably the land around Haifa and the lower Galilee. The upper Galilee was probably really considered to be part of the Lebanon. I'm not speaking geopolitically here, I'm just speaking geographically. All of those areas are stripped bare. And I hate to say it, it's kind of like a weird image, but it's kind of like the scene you get today at a supermarket before a bad hurricane or winter storm. People strip everything they can off the shelves and they go into hunker down mode. Everybody worries about themselves and there ain't nothing left over. You can really tell the storm is coming. But amongst all this despair, the Navi prays that God will rise to the moment. Ata, now, akum yomar Adonai, ata e romam, ata e nase. Now I will rise, God will say. I will raise myself on high. I will be elevated. If you're curious about the term ata akum yomar Adonai, speaking in the third person, God will say, and now God speaking, I will get up. That's very similar to that which is used in Tehillah Yud Bet or Tehillim 12, where things are essentially they're praying that God will in the future say, oh, it's time for me to get up now and do what I promised. Taharu chashash teledu kash. Ruchachem eish tochalchem v'hayu amim misrafot sid kotsim ksuchim ba'esh yitzatu. Either God or Yeshua is now speaking these two psukim, these two verses against the coming forces of Asher. Conceive, hey, give birth to straw. Your spirit, or God's spirit, will consume you like fire. Ruchachem is plural, so it would seem to be Asher's spirit, not God's. So perhaps the metaphor is trying to say that you give birth to so much bad feelings and distrust and lack of solidity and reliability, like the hay and the straw, that your own aggressiveness, your own aggressive spirit consumes you. But this is just speculation, especially as that's not actually what happened. It was the miracle, a plague from God that actually burnt them all up, that destroyed them. So perhaps we should just translate Ruchachem as your God spirit and sort of tweak the plural into a singular ruchacha, not literally, but maybe that's what the pasuk means. V'hayu amim misrafot sid kotzim psuchim ba'esh yitzatu. The nations will be like a smoldering fields or cut down. Sid is lime. Cut down thorns will be burned in fire. Remember that thorns and thistles, these kotzim psuchim, are a metaphor. These kotzim are a metaphor for the slings and arrows. Those are the shamir and the shayit, the kotzim, which are the forces of Ashur. But now they're literally cut off. That is, they have no solidity whatsoever, and they are completely burnt away. The salvation has come. So now that we have the enemy forces completely burnt away, God gets up to destroy the enemy completely. The question is, what do we have now? What does the salvation look like? What do people do? What will people think once this salvation begins? Shimu rechokim asher asiti udu krovim gevurati. So God says, listen to what I have done, you who dwell from afar. Understand my strength, you who dwell close. Now Rashi says rechokim are actually FFBs, from births, people who are always from the very first day, and those who hold strong to their religion always. Krovim, Rashi says, are people now coming close to God. Those are the BTs, the Bali Tshuva, who are coming back into the fold. And the reason why he says this is because of the following verses. So let's take a look at that. Pachadu v'tzion chataim, achazara adach hanefim, miyagur lanu esh ochela, miyagur lanu mokadei olam. Sinners in Zion are afraid. The irreligious are seized with trembling. They say, who of us can live with the consuming fire? Who of us can live with the eternal blaze? Now, this consuming fire and the eternal blaze are a double reference. On one hand, they're referring to the fires of the Tophet, the wall of the valley outside Gay Ben Hinnom, outside of Jerusalem, where God has promised that the enemies' bodies or the enemies themselves will be burned up in the fires there. But the other thing it's referencing to is the power of God, both in his decimation of the enemy, but now that his Shekhinah is taking up residence in the temple. That's why we have the word Mokdei Olam. That's like your Ner Tamid. When people return to the fold, so that's why Rashi sees this as a problem, that when people return to the fold, or when they're trying to return to the fold, they're going to say, oh no, I'm so scared and I'm so frightened because we used to be sinners, and now that God has revealed his presence in Jerusalem, we're all going to be destroyed and burnt up right away. So it's like a chance for them to do tshuva. However, I think that the truth is krovim and rechokim, the translation krovim and rechokim from last pasuk, just means let the whole world hear from far away and from what's close. So, what's going on here, this pasuk, it looks like there are people who are being balei tshuva and are afraid that because of their sins they're going to be decimated. Actually, this verse is really just a prayer. And it's a very similar prayer to the one we say in Tehillah Chaf Daled, Psalm 24. When do we say that prayer? We say it on Sunday at the end of morning prayers. And we say it when the Torah is returned to the Ark on Monday, Thursday, and on Shabbat Mincha, on Shabbat afternoon. How does that psalm go? It says, Mi aleh b'har Adonai, u'mi yakum b'kol chadsho. Who is going to be able to go up to the mountain of God, and who can go to his holy place? What kind of person can exist in the Temple Mount or even in Jerusalem when God reveals himself in all of his glory? Who isn't a sinner, essentially? And the answer is, I'll tell you what kind of person that could go up in that prayer. Mi aleh b'har Adonai, mi yakum b'kol chadsho, neki chapayim uvar levav, asher lo nasa lashav nafshi. I'm sure most of you are familiar with that verse. So what they're saying is, don't worry about the details. Don't worry about the religious law, such as Shabbat and liturgical and the Korbanot. What you need is honesty, bar levav, justice, and righteousness. That is, who is exceptional and who deserves to be on Har HaBayit even when God is revealed there in all of his glory? It's one who speaks humans with, one who treats humans with respect and dignity, especially when that person, the person who's respecting and humans, has been appointed to position of leadership over those people. And the answer ultimately is the same here. No doubt Yeshayahu has studied David's Tehillim very well. What is the answer to how could we sinners be on the mountain where the fire is always available? So the answer is Holech Tzedakot V'Dover Meisharim. I'll tell you who could be there. Moes Bebetza Ma'ashakot Noer Kapav Mitmok Bashochad Otemos No Mishmo Damim Votemeinav Meraot Bara. One who walks in righteousness, speaks the truth, rejects fraudulent business, waves away bribes, closes his ears to false accusations, and closes his eyes to against seeing the evil that people want to display. Now, those last two things are not written in the sense of see no evil and hear no evil. That is, it's all going on, but people are pretending it's not going on. But what it's saying is, if these judges and these businessmen, if these social leaders stop entertaining falsehoods and all this creepiness and badness that's going on, if there's no market in these goods, then the market will soon dry up. Somebody will come to say, oh, did you hear what happened? Or let me tell you the story about this guy. If nobody is willing to listen to it, then the market will dry up and people will stop saying these terrible things and doing these terrible things. There's no profits in it. Hu meromim yishkon mitzadot slaim misgabo lachmo nitan meimav ne'emanim. That person, that is the person who's honest and faithful and treats humans with dignity and respect and refuse to listen to lies and refuse to watch people in any kind of false bad behavior, they can dwell on high. That's the answer to the question. You think you're chataim. The way to not be chataim is to behave this way. If you behave this way, you're not chataim. And therefore, your fortifications, mitzadot, slaim, eskabo, are of stone, where he will live on high, he, the person, not God, God always lives on high, and his food and water are always available and reliable. So you have security and good economy and ability to be holy in the holy country, in the holy city. Melech biyofyo techezena einecha tirena eretz mir mar chakim libcha yehege ema ayei sofer ayei shokel ayei sofer eta migdalim. And then your eyes will behold the king in his beauty. Melech b'yofyo, and this is probably no doubt referring to God, but maybe also Yechezkel, the fact that a king will be able to rule well because the people under him are reliable, faithful, and deserve to be treated as well as they treat other people. They will see wide open lands, Eretz Merchakim, and you will say in awe, who will count, who can measure, oh, who will be able to count the towers? Now, this pasuk of Libcha Yege Eima, a lot of commentaries see it as negative, based on the word shokel as a question of who's going to do the tax collection, will the oppressing nation do it, but I think this is a continuation, that's why I read those two verses together. It's an exalted prayer, so I'm going to translate the word as ema, as awe, and not fear, and shokel is not somebody who takes taxes, but shokel is that stone that we saw a few chapters ago, which is at the end of the bottom of a plumb line, which allows buildings to be built justly and righteously. And I'll tell you what I see when I read this verse. Libcha yege ima, yesh sofer, where is the counter? Ayesh shokel, where is the one who could build these buildings correctly? Ayesh sofer at the Megdalimo, who can count these towers? So what I see is the image that I get when I drive up the number one road to Yerushalayim. And you pass Beit Shemesh, and you go past Mivatzer Tzion, you come up on this big kind of uphill, you have to shift your car down to gear a little bit to get some good action, and all of a sudden you see the city. First you see Ramot, and then you see the rest of the mountains of Yerushalayim shining in gold, the stone and the cities and the walls shining in gold. And it's so wide, Marchakim, it goes on forever. It fills up your whole view. If you've ever driven this road, I think you know exactly what I'm talking about. And when you look at those buildings, that's exactly what you see. Who can count these buildings? Who can count these towers of Yerushalayim? Who can count the masses of people that are now living there? After the salvation, when we're able to build Yerushalayim, who will possibly be able to count its number? I think that's what this pasuk means. And if I'm taking a chance of saying that this prophecy of Yeshayahu may already have come true, at least partially, and that we should cherish the fact that it's at least partially come true, and we should work not to lose it, well, if I'm being a little fundamentalist, so be it. Now, referring back to all those bad and haughty politicians, if you remember, part of the sinning that was going on in Yerushalayim was these politicians that refused to listen to Yeshayahu's advice and made fun of his prophecies as if they were kindergarten ditties. Remember, Kav L'Kav, Tzav L'Tzav, the ones who were so proud of their deals with death. So what Yeshayahu says now is, "Et am no'az lo tir'eh, am imke safa mi shemoa, Nilag Lashon Ein Bina. You won't see any more an audacious nation. You won't see any of such deep intelligence that they refuse to listen. You won't see any more mocking tongues that lack or prevent knowledge. Chazei Tzion, Kiryat Moadenu. Oh, look, you know what you'll see? Look at Tzion, our gathering city. Enecha Tirena Yerushalayim Nave Sha'ananan. Oel bal yitz'an bal yisayit hedotav la netzach v'chol chavalav bal yinateku. Your eyes will behold Jerusalem, the city of security, the city of surety. A tent, notice the word mo'ed and now the word ohel, to combine together you get oel mo'ed, that will never be moved, whose pegs will never be pulled up ever, and whose cords and bonds are unbreakable. Kiim sham adir Adonai lanu makom naharim yorim rachave yadayim bal telech bo oni shayit v'tzi adir lo ya'avrenu. For there he is, the Lord, in all of his power for us. It's a place, it will be a place of rivers, of broad streams, open spaces, where never an attacking ship will come and never a powerful vessel will cross. And since there are no major rivers going up to Yerushalayim, it seems that the prophet is now describing not just Jerusalem, but what I would call Greater Jerusalem, which encompasses all of the promised land. Ki Adonai Shofteinu, Adonai Mechokekeinu, Adonai Malkeinu, Hu Yoshienu. Indeed, the Lord is our leader, Shofteinu. He is our ruler, Mechokekeinu. Adonai Malkeinu, he is our king, Hu Yoshienu, he will save us. Remember, this is still a prophecy of a redemption from troubled times. Yoshienu in the future, but in a confident future, he will save us. Nitshu chavalech chavalayich bal yichazku chen tornam bal parasu nes Az chulak ad shalal marbeh pischim bazazu vaz. Going back where we began at the beginning of the pasuk, at the beginning of the chapter, a promise that the enemies will be defeated and plundered, and allowing that very messianic dream that was the meat and potatoes, the meat inside the sandwich of this chapter. The pasuk says their ropes, that is the enemies, have fallen off, as opposed to ours, which will never fall, never break. No one can hold on to their ropes. So are their standards or masts unable to hold the flag. There will be much spoils of war then, and even the cripples will go out and seize the spoils. Uval yomar shachein chaliti ha'am ha'yoshev ba nesu avon. And no dweller, i.e. in Yerushalayim, in Israel, will say, oh, I've fallen ill, chaliti. And the nation who dwells there will be forgiven of every and all sins.